This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport. Powered by fans.
And there it is. That's as good as it gets on this stage. Nissan Townstar EV strikes again. It's an unstoppable van. Unstoppable!
Look, just fantastic. You can actually see the ProPilot technology in action. Effortless parallel parking.
It moves with all the confidence that comes with a 5-year warranty.
And with a bench full of all-star van experts, there's real strength in depth here.
That's all-star quality.
Search Nissan Townstar EV and visit your local all-star van centre to see for yourself.
Terms and conditions apply. 5 years or 100,000 miles, whichever comes first.
ProPilot is an advanced driver assist technology. Driver's responsibility to stay alert, drive safely, and control vehicle at all times.
The TalkSport Fan Network is proudly supported by McDelivery, bringing you the food you love. McDelivery brings a top-tier lineup of food right to your door. No matter the result, you'll always be winning with McDelivery. Order now on the McDonald's app and you'll get rewards points delivered too, so that ordering today means some tasty rewards for tomorrow. Only via app at participating restaurants. 18 plus rewards registration required. Points only on menu items, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Emery's useless, bro. You understand?
And Emery needs to go. Unai Emery, you're finished, bro. Leave. Then Emery out tonight. End of story.
Good evening.
And baby! Ollie Watkins! Delicious! So sweet!
Welcome to the My Old Man Said podcast. I'm David Michael, the editor of MyOldManSaid.com and your host. Joining me to discuss the coefficient derby between Aston Villa and Arsenal, Mr. Chris Bird, Mr. Phil Shaw. Welcome.
Hello.
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 Ole.
How are you?
Ole. Ole.
Ole, ole, ole.
This is more like it, isn't it, gentlemen? Now we can
Much
break.
More.
We can put the slippers on. We can put our robes on. Break open the port. Cigars, maybe. Well, we'll save the cigars until Athens and the end of the season. Start of the week. Well, even not even start of the week, before this game kicked off. In trepidation in terms of the actual result of this game. Arsenal, pretty powerful. Different version of the team that flaked out a little bit last season. We had players missing, suspended. We were leaking goals left, right and centre. But I think there's one thing that galvanised Villa before this game, and I can pinpoint that to how the rest of our coefficient buddies all flaked out. Now, the coefficient, if you don't know what we're referring to, is the performance of English teams in European football, and if they outgunned the Germans in this season's European tournaments, then the Premier League would get an extra spot, fifth spot, for the Champions League next season. And at maybe a few days ago, that was what we were kind of relying on as we were flaking out against the likes of Brentford. And then this week came and Arsenal didn't win, Manchester City didn't win. Although, to be honest, Manchester City, at least that was an away draw. Then suddenly West Ham were getting pulverised. But most of all, the leader of the coefficient in terms of the banker, Liverpool, got beat 3-0 at home. And you're just thinking, well, thanks a lot, you fucking morons. So suddenly fifth place, it was starting to fade a bit, wasn't it, in terms of it being something to aim for.
So then Villa just took it by the fucking jaffers.
Well, now Emery said two things here, boys. One, we have to finish fourth now, and we're going to finish fourth. Two, we need to exact revenge against these coefficient dropouts. So first of all, we're going to give Arsenal a good seeing to, and then Liverpool when they come to Villa Park later to teach them. Anyway, we will get on to that glorious, glorious trip to the Emirates. A nice little double for Emery over Arteta and his old team as well. But before we get into that, a big thanks to the sponsors of this show for helping making it happen. NordVPN. NordVPN. With NordVPN, you can switch your IP address to wherever you want to be in the world. So it also helps you access ways of watching those 3 o'clock Saturday games. They subscribe to other packages around the world by resetting your address. Also, the underlining thing is it protects your online browsing and safety. And NordVPN are giving My Old Man Said listeners a special deal, which, as well as big savings, you do get 4 months free as well, plus a 30-day money-back guarantee to try it out. One account can service 6 devices as well, so do check it out at nordvpn.com/MOMS. Moms. Right, Villa News. This week coming up, second leg of the Europa Conference League quarterfinal against Lille. Looking forward to that one. Are you packed yet, Mr. Bud?
No, that's my on my Monday to-do list.
I thought you'd have already packed. Eager. Straight after you got back from Villa Park on Thursday night.
I mean, I am eager.
Looking forward to that one now. You feel a bit more emboldened after that Arsenal result now, so it should be a cracker. We're not even going to talk coefficient now. We are just going to plough through all our games and destiny will be in our own hands. It's something I don't like that happened this week. In accordance to what a good season it potentially will end up as, was the final home game of the season against Liverpool being moved from a weekend spot to the graveyard shift on Monday evening.
Yeah, not happy about that.
No. I mean, this was a chance, the timing of the fixture, last home game, you normally have like the lap of appreciation and, you know, basically you're saying goodbye to the season. Now, we would be in a position where potentially, touch wood, Villa would be off to Athens for the final of the Europa League and also potentially would have clinched or very close to a Champions League place. I mean, we would probably know then about the coefficient or if, you know, we were actually mathematically in fourth place, for example. So now, I mean, as you saw against Lille, even though it was like, you know, big game, high stakes, still people have to get home and, you know, you'd like to probably stick around and soak it up a bit more. But especially a final home game of the season, and not to be doing it like in daylight with the sun shining and, you know, where you get that feeling that you're now off for your summer and we will adjourn at the end of the summer. It's kind of a bit sad, really, isn't it? We knew we were going to get the TV slot, Villa versus Liverpool, both teams in the top four. But, you know, Sunday would have been nicer.
Especially this season.
It's a school night as well. You know, normally the players like to bring the kids out on the pitch and all that kind of malarkey.
Yeah, I always like when the last home game is on the last day of the season, yeah, to be honest, rather than the week before.
Yeah, and even if it was, we'd still have the Europa Conference League match. But then again, it's quite nice to have a send-off, isn't it? Like sending the troops off to battle kind of vibe.
Well, hopefully that's the case.
Yeah. Also, pre-season trip to Dortmund has been confirmed by Dortmund. Still no whiff from Villa yet, which would be the weekend of the 10th of August. It's like their season opener. I think they probably, like Villa, just have that one big home game, don't they?
Mm-hmm.
To kick off the season a week before their season. But good one, though, because I mean, I've always wanted to see the yellow wall and everything, but to actually see it with Villa there, even in a friendly context. Something happened. Villa got some final, not the Europa Conference League final, something to do with Phil Shaw.
It's nothing to do with me, but they did reach the final of the under-21s reached the final of the Birmingham Senior Cup.
Did you get off the bench? This is the game you were playing in, wasn't it, that you mentioned last time?
No, I wasn't needed off the bench. I was just in a clap and roll on the bench. Encouragement.
So, they'll play Racing Club Warwick in the final.
I keep mocking this tournament, but one thing I can't work out is it's the under-21s, so why are they in the Senior Cup?
Well, because all the other teams you're playing against are seniors, so you're playing against...
What, like in their 50s and 60-year-old
type people? No, as in you're actually playing like everyone else is playing their first team. It's a bit like when the 21s were playing in the Papa John's Trophy games. It's that kind of setup.
Did you go to that game?
I did with a friend of the show, Mr. Razak. They played well. Actually, it was a good game of football.
Good.
Roy Wilson scored a couple.
I hope the Senior Cup's like one of those huge old trophies.
Do you know what? It's actually pretty big just because it's so old. I think, if I'm right in saying, it's the second oldest in football after the FA Cup. Believe it or not.
Well, if Villa do win it, it'll be the first time in 39 years they've won it. I think that's a bit overdue. Yeah. They play Racing Club Warwick.
Which
in the
sounds
final.
A lot more glamorous than it is.
Something we mentioned a few months ago was this agreement with Ataris, who I think they're based in New York, Philadelphia, aren't they? Who have become a minority partner with Fee Sports. providing capital to help infrastructure investments. And basically, it's like a kind of a venture capitalist, isn't it? It's like just an investment company to hopefully grow. But, you know, it's not like anybody's blindly throwing loads of money at players and stuff.
I think this is more aimed at the off the field.
Yeah, exactly. It'll be like more
brand
on the
building and all that
commercial side as well. But the agents' figures that came out, which we should be mentioning here.
It was about 21 million, wasn't it, that Villa spent? 21,160,000.
That's just on agents' fees. And you got to remember, last season, our gate receipts were 18.5 million. So that shows you that gate receipts, nothing. So these people that say, oh, Terrace View and Lower Grounds, they help us financial fair play and get better players in. They don't even cover agents' fees, people.
Yeah, let alone the players.
Gate receipts don't even cover agents' fees. So you should fight if the club are going to take the piss with ticket prices, then say something about it, because it doesn't really affect their bottom line to any great extent. But they haven't got an income problem, the club. It's a spending problem. You've just got to be a bit more savvier.
And we weren't even one of the highest. I mean, we're sort of in the top, I think, five or six, but like Man City spent 60 million on agents' fees. Chelsea, 75 million. That's mental.
Well, the Chelsea 75 million is going to be wiped out by them selling their hotel to themselves.
Yeah,
so.
Talk about.
Yeah, but we don't need to worry about them. We're talking about Villa ticket prices. You know, we were meant to have a meeting, the fan advisory board meeting. It was originally the 20th of March. The club put it back to the 27th. This is because we requested it, because obviously supporters are concerned about another rise after two massive, significant rises. And then one day before the meeting, mysteriously, they cancelled it. No reason given. And here we are 3 weeks later, after the date of that supposed meeting on ticket prices. And I think they're simply just waiting to see. I think they've got two prices in mind, and they're waiting to see where we finish. Whether we get to Athens, so the feel-good fever's good on that respect. And, you know, if we finish in the Champions League, then they'll definitely go for figure number two, the higher of the two in mind. But it's pretty cynical. They should be announcing them now, like most of the other teams. Right, 3 points. Number one, Premier League finally going to adopt semi-automatic offsides.
In a nutshell,
this will just speed things up, will it not?
You'd hope so, surely.
Yeah.
The upshot is they expect VAR checks to be no more than 30 seconds. Well, we'll see what happens there. Point number two, Newcastle's wonderful 4-0 win against Spurs was experienced in a new way by some Newcastle fans. Deaf Newcastle fans were given haptic shirts.
Which is like a forced sort of feedback. It's like they'll get vibrations whenever something happens. So it enhances the experience.
Well, there would have been a lot of vibrations going on when Spurs players were slipping around all over the place and Newcastle were punishing them. One in five adults apparently in the UK have hearing loss. I didn't know it was that bigger percentage.
That sounds really high, doesn't it?
Mm-hmm. But also one of the Newcastle players, was it Dan Byrne?
Yeah, Dan Byrne, yeah.
Celebrated with sign language as well, which...
Nice touch.
Was a nice touch. Villa fans were also getting haptic when Newcastle were putting 4-4 Spurs as well, without wearing any special shirts. So we know exactly how they were feeling. Point number three, Roma fans have set up a crowdfunding account to pay for defender Gianluca Mancini's fine that he got for going into the crowd after Roma beat Lazio 1-0, grabbed a flag which is in the colours of Lazio with a big rat on it, obviously a reference to Lazio, and waved it in celebration. The Italian Football Federation had since fined him €5,000, but the crowdfunder that the Roma fans set up managed to raise €7,000 in less than 14 hours. If Mancini decides to pay the fine himself, the money raised will be given to charity. Bullshit. The Federation stepping in. When the mileman said, crowdfunded, never mind the Arsenal, here's the Aston Villa flag, got banned from Wembley because they thought it would incite violence. It's like absolute bullshit.
The only thing it would have incited was a massive Arsenal victory.
Well, no, it would have been a win for Villa. That's what happened when that flag didn't get used. We just lost everything. It was our only hope, bud. That flag's time was now, not when we were absolutely shit and a season away from getting relegated. But what can you do? Great flag.
It was a great flag.
I'd like to see it back, but the club seem to have, nobody's taken responsibility for it. Seem to have lost it.
Conveniently.
Thank you very much to everybody who joined us in Match Club.
Great
for the Arsenal
today.
Game. Arsenal games are always great in Match Club, the away ones. There's been some pivotal ones, like the Trezeguet winner that got us out of a big, big hole. We would have got relegated if Trezeguet hadn't scored that goal against Arsenal during lockdown. And this one was probably even better because this sets us up very nicely for the run-in for the season. You two can become a My Old Man Sim member and join us in Match Club and also get ad-free versions of the show. And access to extra shows as well. We'll be doing a bunch of extra shows while we are in Lille in this upcoming week. Please do go to myoldmansaid.com and check out the membership link on there for further details. Thank you very much. Right, this game, the coefficient derby, as I said earlier on. There was doubts forming, wasn't there, people? There was concerns about leaky defences. There was concerns about suspended players here and there. But generally form in the last few months, well, form this year has been pretty flaky. I mean, I think I mentioned it in a previous pod recently that we were like sixth or seventh in terms of form after the United. I think I put the table up on social media. After the United defeat at Old Trafford, we really flunked out. A lot of people saying that, you know, without Kamara, this defence isn't anything because it's the same back four that kept a clean sheet against Manchester City and Arsenal within a week. So we were getting to the point where, have we got enough to get this over the line? And when I say get this over the line, I mean get to that final and win in Athens and finish off in a Champions League place. Now, we were starting to doubt the whole Champions League thing, but A, because it was looking likely that fifth was our destiny, but also the English teams had a mare in Europe.
Yeah,
I mean, we always warned, didn't we? We said there's a lot of English bias in this Opta prediction. Oh, England got five teams and Germany got three, so England should easily get this. But when you saw the draw, you thought, well, hang on a minute, Leverkusen should whack West Ham.
And did.
Bayern Munich potentially will beat Arsenal. They beat them 10-2 last time. And 50-50 maybe Dortmund and Athletic Madrid. And then Villa got Lille. They could easily go out there. And Liverpool were like probably the favourites of all the English teams. And then you
suddenly got tonked at home, which never happens.
Yeah, suddenly the results start to roll in. None of the Champions League teams win. Manchester City's probably result is better. It's away from home, 2-2 with Madrid. Lille. We concede a late goal, which gives you a bit of trepidation for the trip to Lille, knowing that we're liable to leak a goal. So we go into this Arsenal game fearing the worst and even pondering the conclusion, will he rest players like he did against Manchester City?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, certainly an option, because the resting against City, I would say his hand was forced slightly more, and he even referred to that in the game, that he was getting practice in for the games to come in that City game. So,
well, yeah, I think what happened with the City game was, like, you lose your three irreplaceables in Watkins, McGinn and Martinez for one reason or the other. And then you're thinking, well,
tough.
It's tough. So you might as well, you know, for example, you're giving Zaniola a start and that comes in useful because he's, you know, he's obviously a bit more up for it for this Arsenal game. And, you know, same with Duran, etc. You're basically getting them ready for the tests ahead. And it's a sacrifice. And you're thinking, well, we've got most of our players fit now in terms of, you know, who's available. There's nobody apart from Louise, really. So you're thinking, right, he's really playing the percentages if he was going to do that again. But when you saw the team sheet, you thought, yeah, okay.
He sees an opportunity.
Zaniola steps up. He can at least be a handful and occupy him. And if you're going to be under a certain degree of relentless pressure, then anybody who can hold the ball up and occupy two or three players, you know, even to give you a chance to take a breath, is useful in a game like this. So kind of thought, right, I'm glad he's gone stronger here. And let's see what happens. Any surprises team lineup for you? I think we said Diaby over Bailey. I think Bailey would be somebody who would be rested.
Yeah, and obviously to give a bit of impact off the bench, which in hindsight now, of course, was a great decision. But I think the team pretty much picked itself. I was personally actually quite glad to see the same back four from a previous couple of games. I thought it was important to actually get a little bit of continuity going back there. And again, fortunately, I think that paid off. Strange though, sort of just before the kickoff, because the Liverpool result would come in, I had that sort of thought in my mind that is this going to be one of those strange days where I didn't necessarily fancy Villa, but you know, sometimes where you just sense, is this one of those ones where the footballing gods are doing their thing? And
well, funny enough, we've actually skipped over, well, we mentioned it earlier, the Newcastle Spurs scenario.
Yeah, it's one of those weekends where things just happen.
Because there, I didn't know which way that would play. Would Emery be thinking, right, well, actually, Spurs aren't going anywhere, so we could probably rest up here to fight another day if he, you know, if he went that path? Or is it, right, let's try to get something here, because you only have six games to do something, so why throw one of them away? Or why not try 100%, should I rephrase that? So I think that probably more for the players, it probably thought, right, if we can do something here... Because we've got eyes on Thursday, but they, you know, they've also got their eyes on that Champions League game, haven't they? They can't be going, you know, one game at a time, bollocks, whatever. They'll be thinking about the Munich game as the big, big one.
And I think it played a bit in their selection, because Arsenal's great run since the start of the year, I mean, they hadn't lost in this calendar year so far, was because they were playing like Havertz up front on his own, sort of, and everyone off him. And in this game, I was sort of surprised to see Gabriel Jesus come in for a start.
Well, they'd only played this formation up front once before this season, I think. And I think that was against Palace. They won 5-0.
Yeah.
But the fact they only played it once was a bit odd. But, you know, we're talking with hindsight now, but there was still interpretation. But you were kind of glad that they were, you know, he was going for it. Just, you know, we didn't know for sure if that Manchester City thing was a way that Emery does know when a game's not up for grabs and plays to win the war as opposed to the battle.
Yeah.
But anyway, let's get into this. Pretty much started off as we expected, though.
Yeah, Arsenal had a lot of possession, a lot of huff and puff. Really, like their approach play and the way they manipulate the ball with guys like Odegaard. I mean, they are brilliant on the eye, aren't they, to be fair? Everything that they do is good, goes through Odegaard. And the way they were sort of pulling Villa, not necessarily pulling them apart, but the way they were manipulating Villa's back line, they were sort of really going after Dini with Saka and Konsa on the other side. And Konsa was struggling with a combination of Trossard going wide, and then he had Havertz going through the channel. He kind of didn't know whether to stick or twist, and he was really getting put under pressure. But I thought they actually stood up to it pretty well for the most part.
I thought they were a bit more compact. I thought there's a big question mark, really, wasn't it? Was Tielemans and McGinn going back? You maybe thought, well, we're actually sacrificing what we've got up top in Rodgers, Zaniola, and Diaby. Perhaps not as strong as it could be. And, you know, you've kind of sometimes said in the past that Tielemans probably and McGinn are probably wasted a bit playing further back. Are they suitable enough? I think, well, both of them can get stuck in. This is something
they kind of forget about
Tielemans, that he, I mean, we joked before that sometimes he looks like a baller that's now a Sunday league player, and he looks like he's blowing when he's running. But actually, when you watch games, he does, you know, he does know how to tackle as well.
He gets about.
Yeah.
And you talked about strength. I actually thought the clever move in this one, obviously Zaniolo played out on the left, Diaby started out on the right, but they actually put Rodgers centrally. And I think, I know that's where he wants to play, but I think when you've got a lad who's about, what's he, 6'3", 6'4", big lad, and he's a powerful runner, and he will put himself about. I thought that was a really good decision, because actually he did give Villa moments where they could break through the Arsenal press, and he was
but
very
he's also,
good.
But he's got a good touch, and he's got a good way to pass. So he's pretty good, like a pretty good link-up player.
Mm-hmm. And I don't think we can go much further without mentioning Zaniola as well, because while he's perilously close to becoming a scapegoat, he was the right player at the right time, because Ben White for Arsenal has been given, you know, plaudits all season. Zaniolo kept him busy, whether it was holding the ball, generally being annoying with what he was doing, you know, getting his body in the way, winning free kicks and things like that there. It really started to stunt Arsenal, because before that, they had been very dangerous down that side.
Yeah, I'd agree with that.
White's a bit of a Konsa, isn't he? He's a hybrid converted right back, and he does fancy himself with his fake tan going down the wing, floating in balls. But that was a good thing. Zaniola was occupying him and pegging him back.
Yeah, it's always going to be a difficult gig for a player on the left-hand side against Arsenal, because obviously you've got Saka, so you do have to be conscious of your defensive work. But I think Zaniolo almost got us up the pitch a little bit on a few occasions, just by sort of like a bit of a battering ram, for lack of, you know, he spent a lot of the time on his backside, and he took a bit of a kicking throughout the game, but he grew into the game.
Got shirt pulled by White,
Yeah.
And there it is. That's as good as it gets on this stage. Nissan Townstar EV strikes again. It's an unstoppable van. Unstoppable!
Look, just fantastic. You can actually see the ProPilot technology in action. Effortless parallel parking.
It moves with all the confidence that comes with a 5-year warranty.
And with a bench full of all-star van experts, there's real strength in depth here.
That's all-star quality.
Search Nissan Townstar EV and visit your local all-star van centre to see for yourself.
Terms and conditions apply. 5 years or 100,000 miles, whichever comes first.
ProPilot is an advanced driver assist technology. Driver's responsibility to stay alert, drive safely, and control vehicle at all times.
Picture the scene. All of your mates around, you've got your McNugget share boxes ready to go. Partner this with your team playing champagne football. Perfect. Order McDelivery now on the McDonald's app. There's nothing quite like a McDelivery. At participating restaurants, 18 plus, serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
But what surprised me about Arsenal from previous years, Arsenal, is they work very hard. I mean, Villa,
yeah,
the closed Villa down, there was one where Torres was about to clear the ball and I think it was Odegaard slid in and won a corner from it. And that was, I thought that was going to be a turning point, but they defended the corner well. But of course, Villa...
Sorry, just to stunt you there, but that for me is the difference between Arsenal this season and last season. Yeah. Is they are the tenacity is impressive. Like the exact example that you're talking about there, where most teams are just like letting Torres play out there because you know the ball is lost. But they were like, no, we are hunting you down every second of the game.
Yeah. Well, they carry the intensity of their manager, don't they? Obviously, Arteta's a very intense guy on the touchline, and I think his team is kind of a mirror image of him a little bit. We kind of saw that at Villa Park, and in the first half at the Emirates, we really saw that. They were really going after Villa's press, and they were hunting in packs to get the ball back. But I think actually, on occasions, Villa did manage to get through the press and did so really, really well. You know, Tielemans, McGinn had a good couple of breaks. Rodgers had probably two or three balls where he released Zaniolo and Watkins fantastically.
Yeah, sorry, Phil.
No, I just agree, but Villa didn't change. Villa stuck to their playing out from the back for the whole 90 minutes, and there was a couple of times when you're going, oh, don't play it across your box like that. You had the terrible thoughts in your head that something was going to go wrong, but to their credit, no matter how tight the situation was, they kept doing the triangles, doing the passes, and when they needed to, they got the ball up front, and it was sticking.
And the good news was they weren't crossing it in.
No, well, Arsenal, the way they play, they kind of overplay a little bit. They try and pass through the eye of a needle, and I thought
music Carlos to our ears.
Yeah, Carlos and Torres were very close together, and I mean, I thought Carlos, I don't want to jump too far ahead, but he rightfully got man of the match. I thought he was fantastic throughout. You know, we had a couple of moments in the game against Leo where we were a bit kind of like head in hands. And
well, we said one of the last podcasts, we said Carlos is great if you're going at him or by the side of him,
one to one.
But if you cross it in, he's
question.
I can't remember who messaged me. I think it was a Spurs fan. He was saying, "Oh, your defense is great. You know, really impressive." And I said, "All Arsenal have to do is cross it in."
Yeah. Arteta's not the tactical genius, and everybody thinks he is. All you had to do is start crossing it.
They just don't want to, do they? They play the way they play. And then Carlos had probably maybe three, maybe four fantastic recovery tackles in that first half.
Yeah.
On Havertz, he was great. He covered ground brilliant, and I thought his distribution was really good.
He did slip over like those Spurs and Liverpool defenders this weekend.
Yeah,
but the big moment of the first half was literally it all happened in a minute, didn't it? Watkins gets through, drives through, hits it, hits the post. You think it's going in off the post because it spins back. Unfortunately, goes wide. Then Arsenal go up the other end, and Trossard's just about to tap it into an open goal, well, blast it into an open goal, but Martinez point blank range gets a leg out. It's you know, it's one of those where as a fan you think it's a goal, and it's, you know, when a keeper makes a save like that, that's like the highest accolade.
Yeah, and it was really a tale of bad luck on both parts. Watkins really unlucky hitting the post, because that came from Villa playing out, and Zaniolo hit a ball through, missed out Rodgers, went to Watkins, and he was clean through, and it was Arsenal tried to clear it and hit off like the back of, I think it was Zinchenko. I think the Arsenal defender tried to clear it, hit Zinchenko in the back, and then Watkins was on it in a flash.
Yeah.
But the one at the other end, that came from an Arsenal block shot. It was the block shot just went the wrong way and came straight into Arsenal and slid it across. And Trossard, he'll be having nightmares about Martinez the night after that one if he slept. Yeah. But of course, we know Trossard doesn't sleep.
And at this point, you know, Martinez coming up with saves like this, they're not a surprise, are they?
Sorry. So that's the Adams family reference to Trossard. So 0-0, half time. Yeah. You're thinking, there's an onslaught coming, but we're in this.
Yeah, it was different from the City game where the defensive wall let Villa down and they didn't go in, you know, on level terms. This time you did go in on level terms and you're thinking, right, let's see what you've got, Arsenal, in the second half.
You're expecting them to come strong, and then you're also expecting them to really come strong if it's still 0-0 with like 10 minutes to go, because titles are on the line here. But the game transpired in a completely alien way to what we expected and what had actually played out in the first half. I mean, you're about 15 minutes through and they flash up the possession stats, and you know, Villa have had 60% of possession, and that pretty much sums up what's happening in front of your eyeballs. Villa are in complete control.
They were. They dictated the tempo of the game, the pattern of the play, pretty much from the whistle. It was kind of like, I wouldn't say bizarre, because it was great to see, and we've seen Villa do it before. Obviously, it was kind of a bit more like the Manchester City game, wasn't it, back in December? Arsenal allowed Villa to play. Villa stuck to their guns playing out from the back. It was a bit of a tactical battle in that first 10, 15 minutes of the second half, because you did think Arsenal were going to come and go after Villa, but Villa were in much better control of the ball, and I think Arsenal maybe allowed Villa to get into a tempo which traditionally at the start of a second half Villa haven't managed to do. They did in this one, and while Arsenal had intensity, it almost wasn't in the right place, and Villa was sort of finding that Villa had an out ball all of a sudden.
Yeah, there was one particular sequence, wasn't there, when they were playing out the back, but it was looking slick again, and suddenly you were thinking about, wow, this is how we're playing out the back against City at Villa Park. Mm-hmm. It was like with real confidence, and it's almost like the switch turned on. It's like, can we have this switch turned on more frequently, please? But they were zipping it around. It was moving. You know, you're watching it on TV. Gary Neville started to purr about how Villa were playing. And then you thought, well, if they keep this up, we know what happens normally.
Mm-hmm. And then Tielemans was really unlucky not to open the scoring with a shot, because Villa started to get a real foothold in the game. Yeah, get a real foothold.
Zinchenko tried to get a bit clever with him and tried to nutmeg him as he played it out. Tielemans wasn't having any of it. Picked up the ball. And then, like, on the diagonal hit of Zipper, which defied physics, didn't it? It hit the
crossbar and post. It was so unlucky.
Spun out, hit the post, in all in one motion.
Yeah, because Villa were starting to rack up the corner count. I mean, I can't remember very many in the first half, but they finished with six corners against Arsenal. I think probably four or five of them in the second half, and they all came in sort of in a burst. And the belief was starting to leave Arsenal, because you expected, like you said, you expected the onslaught from Arsenal, subs to come on and turn the game for them and things like that, but it just didn't happen. It's like the pressure got to them again, and Villa just didn't let them have the ball.
But going back to the Tielemans shot, I mean, it would have been great if that went in, because that's a real goal. And we've been waiting for a Tielemans crashing off the bar, power blaster. But at that stage, I had a thought when it went off for a goal kick. And that was like, I had a feeling like this isn't like, oh, Villa will regret those two chances they've had, you know, Watkins and Tielemans here. I felt back to the game at the Emirates where McGinn scored a goal in like 30 seconds. From kickoff.
Yeah, it was really early. It was disallowed, wasn't it?
Disallowed, which was very dubious. And Villa, you just thought, oh, is that our chance? As you do. And Villa just spanked them, didn't they? And here you thought, I don't think we're ruining our chances here. I think there's going to be more. You felt something's turned here, and it's Villa in the ascendancy. So it wasn't like we've squandered our chances here. It's like something's happening.
Mm-hmm. It was almost a bit like the second half against Man City, where Villa was so good, and you thought, we're going to get a goal here. And if we get one, you wouldn't be surprised. I think it was that moment. Bailey had just come on for Diaby, and I thought he had an instant impact. And Zaniolo was starting to grow into the game, and we were starting to pin them back, which wasn't something I expected us to do, especially at the Emirates, where Arsenal have been so strong this year.
But in sustained periods as well.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And I think at that point, I was like, I think we might win this.
Mm.
But then the longer the game goes on, you're thinking, but would I take the 0-0? And are Arsenal going to get a chance? And it didn't really look like Arsenal were going to. There was a snapshot from the edge of the penalty area where Martin had made a pretty routine save, to be honest. And then Villa got the lead, and it was
the clock was ticking. Finish. I mean, the clock was ticking.
Yeah.
We're coming up. We're in the final 10 minutes. So, as you say, you're thinking about is 0-0. Would you take that now? And then came on after an hour, Bailey.
Yep.
Yeah, 20 odd minutes later. He's one of those players, that ball was going out wider, the angle was disappearing, but you thought, he's a guy you bank on.
Yeah, Zaniolo had just gone off and Moreno come on, so we got to see Emery's double fullbacks on one side,
yeah,
which for wonders. One of the first times. Yeah, and look, Moreno hasn't, a bit like Carlos, Moreno hasn't been in great form either, but he played a big part in the goal because he won the ball back from another corner and he slid in Lucas Dean, and just the ball in from Dean's fine. Torres goes in front and everyone misses it and it just goes to Bailey at the back post. But if you listen to what Paul Merson said after the game, it's like Havertz just didn't close down. I mean, he was down. He said these Arsenal players have played so well all season and they just wouldn't put that one bit of effort in. So that was Havertz there. And then Declan Rice fell asleep at the back post and let Leon Bailey come in and finish it.
It's a good finish, that, to be honest, because especially on his right foot, you can very easily just try and smash it or you slice it wide or put it over. But it's a really great finish to hit the target. And at 1-0, everyone's like, fucking hell, hello.
And then we did a reverse clusterfuck.
Yep.
Yeah, we did to them what we've normally done to ourselves. The second goal's brilliant, isn't it, on the break? This is where you're into sort of like textbook away-from-home performance, isn't it? It's a brilliant breakaway. Watkins gets in. Everyone thinks, oh, he's offside there, but of course he's just in his own half. One-on-one with Emil Smith-Rowe, which is a bit of a mismatch, to be brutally honest, goes through and just gently chips the keeper. It's a fantastic finish, an absolute carnage behind the goal in the Villa end. It's great scenes, as they say. And at 2-0, we think, well, that's game over. And Arsenal just look crestfallen at this point as the fans stream to the exits because they know.
Yeah, I mean, there was 8 minutes of injury time. Now, I'm thinking, if Arsenal fans believe they can win this bloody league, I'm sticking around.
I think they knew how their second half had gone. It was like Villa deserved the 2-0. Because let's be brutally honest, this wasn't smash and grab. This was Villa built pressure. They dominated their second period.
They
got their just rewards. Yeah, we schooled him in the second half and we took our big chances. We'd already been unlucky to hit the woodwork.
Do you want to throw in, we put on a big boy's pants?
I think you have to.
I mean, you've got to there. I mean, if there's ever a moment to say you put your big boy pants on, it's
we
going
zip
to
them
Arsenal.
Up. Yeah, we zip them up and button them and tied the cord.
Yeah, and, you didn't let your foot off Arsenal's head either. I mean, if you want to go on that one, I mean,
if you're going down that one, I mean, that's the epitome of it. You take, because Villa of yesteryear would have got the 1-0 lead and then they'd have retreated to the 18-yard line and gone, come on then, Arsenal, you got 10 minutes to save your season. But we didn't. We said, fuck this, we're going to go and kill the game.
Yeah, we were after a third as well.
Yeah, it was, and actually in stoppage time, even though we were 2-0 up and we were sort of really good value for that, we actually showed that we could dig in a little bit. I thought Villa actually did put two banks of four in front of the 18-yard line and just shut down the game and did it pretty well. And Arsenal were like, what the fuck do we do with this? And you could just see there, as the fans stream out the ground, you could see their belief was already on the floor at that point. Mm-hmm. I mean, I was pretty impressed with them in the first half. So it isn't like I would, I'm sure your Arsenal fan TVs, this word will call it a disgrace and we were terrible and we were a shambles. But I actually thought Arsenal were pretty good. I don't think they did a lot wrong in the second half. I just thought Villa were a lot better.
Yeah, credit to Villa, credit to Emery, and credit to all the players, actually.
They were all fantastic.
Very
all had
good
moments.
Performance. It's only the second time, really, we've switched the switch on where playing it out the back so crisp, very brave, full of confidence. It was against City and in the second half of this. Kind of next level where, it's noticeable when somebody like Gary Neville, who's, normally, as the Sky do, they normally focus on the top six teams, actually was taken back by how well they were playing it out the back and complimented them.
And the bravery of Villa.
Key stat.
Well, there's a few of them, the good ones. It's the 19th win for Villa this season, which is the most in a Premier League season so far, because, of course, there's a few games to go yet.
Yeah.
Then Jacob Tanzler of The Athletic. That's the first time Aston Villa have won an away Premier League game against a team starting the day in the top two since December 2009, which, if I'm not incorrect, was Gabby's winner at Old Trafford.
Yeah, I was there. Anything else?
Well, 10 games unbeaten in London. There's only one to go against Palace.
You're missing the main stat, though. The main stat is the first time Mikel Arteta has admitted Arsenal were beaten by the better team in an interview. First time ever in Premier League history.
Yeah. Well, if we're going to continue to rub salt in the Arsenal wounds, Unai Emery is the most successful points per game manager at the Emirates Stadium. So he's got a 2.26 points per game ratio, which is ahead of Arsene Wenger's 2.22 and Arteta's 2.11. So,
rub it in.
Oh dear.
Fancy Premier League player of the game for Villa?
It was Emi Martinez with 9 points.
Ooh.
Clean sheet.
I think the fallout of this quickly is suddenly the mind, just the mental state, the mind shift, the confidence. Like you go into Lille looking at this going, oh shit, they just beat Arsenal, Champions League team, 2-0. They haven't been beaten at home this season, had they, at the Emirates?
I think they got beaten once, didn't they, by West Ham?
Yeah, that's right.
But they've been on a great run of form since.
Yeah, so from a Villa point of view, you're thinking, yeah, clean sheet against Arsenal, comfortable win. Lille are thinking, oh shit. It's a complete switch in mindset now, isn't it, going into that? So we're getting on that Eurostar with beaming smiles on our face. Hopefully they'll still be there when we return.
Well, and looking forward to, you know, they've got two at home. You've got Bournemouth coming up, which becomes a huge game because you can really compound the win at the Emirates. If you win that one, then you put in what they call, you know, serious football pressure. Yeah.
So potentially you could be 4 points clear of Spurs before they play next.
Mm-hmm.
And by the way, they're playing against Arsenal and then the next game's away against Chelsea. So I think Chelsea would be bang up for that. They're recently, their form has been very good.
Yeah, and they've got to play Liverpool and City as well in the running.
Mm-hmm. It's just the shot in the arm that Villa needed at the perfect time.
It's the timing of it really, isn't it? And the manner of which, you know, I watched the Spurs game at Newcastle and Newcastle really did a number on them.
They went man to man as they did against Villa. But the thing about this situation was we were all kind of sitting there just, you know, looking at Spurs' result, waiting for them to slip up and looking at their fixtures and going, oh yeah, there's a good chance they'll slip up, rather than like, right, let's take our destiny in our own hands. And this result was very much symbolic of a, right, let's sort this out ourselves here, let's stop fucking around.
Yeah, it's the shot in the arm we all needed, I think, at the perfect time.
Good for confidence in terms of Athens and good for confidence in terms of Champions League qualification potential. Media Muppets. Right, Phil, let's see us out with some Muppetry. What have you got in the trough for us?
Okay, well, this comes from an article on TalkSport, and it really caught my eye. It goes, Man United could reach the Champions League by finishing sixth after UEFA rule change.
This is like clickbait at its finest from TalkSport.
Oh, it was. They weren't the only one, because I've heard this sort of bandied about as well. I mean, usually it's how Manchester United can catch like Villa and Spurs, but this was how they're going to get into the Champions League. So naturally we assume it's, oh, they're going to overtake Villa or Spurs and finish fifth somehow. But no, this is not the finishing sixth. The article says, if West Ham win the Europa League this season, United would qualify for the Champions League. So if they didn't finish fifth in the Premier League, their league position wouldn't matter.
I mean, and everybody's thinking, how?
I know. It goes, another spot in Europe's elite competition would be freed up, which would go to the next best team in the domestic league. And if United finishes
Newcastle.
Season, I know, it's just, there's so much wrong with this. If United finishes season sixth where they currently sit, well, they don't even sit there, that would see Ten Hag's men qualify for the Champions League, albeit in very specific conditions. So I was lost. I mean, I was Googling, I was doing everything. I should have just carried on reading to the end of the article and got to the bit that's doing the heavy lifting. The conditions also rely on West Ham finishing fifth in the Premier League, which looks unlikely at best, considering they're even further behind than United. And you're just going, oh.
Unlikely at miracle as well. Never mind unlikely at best.
Yeah, just wasted more of my life.
And if you ever see some ridiculous headline and it says Manchester United, it's because Manchester United have got a massive international supporter base. So media outlets just will come up with any clickbait headline and throw Man United in there just to get as many clicks possible. I'm surprised the Birmingham Mail haven't renamed Aston Villa Manchester United just to get more clicks. But yeah, I mean, that was just bizarre. I can't understand how anybody could find themselves in a job that they would end up writing that. It just seems bizarre. All right, anyway, we're in the end game now. It's all looking good. Well, not that anything's been decided, but we're up for the fight now. You saw the celebrations after the
And Emery finally game. Admitted we're in the fight, didn't he?
Yeah.
It's the first time. He's been sort of putting it off and putting it off, I think.
So all you guys out there who, when we were fifth, saying, oh, if we finished fifth or sixth, we'd have snatched that, you know, we'd take it. That was a loser's mentality. That was like giving up on what's potentially still ahead. Remember Ron Saunders' words, do you want to bet against us? And when he said that, the odds weren't looking good for Villa winning the league that year.
No.
They were starting to flake a little bit, but you've just got to have that inner resolve now. You know, me and Chris didn't expect anything from Arsenal. We've learnt our lesson. But we also were still fighting to the end in terms of winning that tournament in Athens. And also now, thank you to Newcastle again, because that's really given us a kick up the backside, that has, just to think, well, actually, don't forget, Aston Villa, Spurs are Spurs, so just get on with it and you should be all right.
Yeah, do what you were doing for, you know, the vast majority of the season.
And this weekend has seen a massive swing in the potential fortunes of Aston Villa in terms of what happens this season. So we raise a glass to that, and we look forward to speaking to you soon. Until then, it's goodbye from me, and it's goodbye from them.
Goodbye.
Goodbye.
Away days are great, but there's nothing quite like playing at home. The same goes for McDonald's. Maximize your home ground advantage with McDelivery. Order now on the McDonald's app. At participating restaurants, 18 plus serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport. Powered by fans.